Welcome everyone to Phone Show Chat 859, recording this on Sunday the 22nd of June 2025. I'm Steve Litchfield in Berkshire in England. Ted Salmon, you're up in Abergele in North Wales.
I am, and it's been raining all day and it's been lovely, and it's all broken the heat down, and I feel very fortunate.
That's your second podcast of the day as well.
Yes, indeed. Tech Addicts this morning. Last one, the season finale.
Oh, dear. Not another break. Never mind.
Well, we've switched now to doing month on, month off, month on, month off. So all right. There's going to be a season finale every other month.
Jonathan Phillips is our guest. John Phillips. Hi, John. Tell us roughly how old you are, what you do for a living, and where you are in the country.
Okay. I'm 55, soon to be 56 next month. I'm in the Costa del Taf, a.k.a. Cardiff. It's a lot cooler today. It's been very windy with very little rain. And so I think we desperately need some rain down here.
Yeah. Where can people find you on the interwebs?
Just basically with regards to that, I just on the forum that we have, and yeah, email, basically that sort of thing. I'm not really on social media very much or X.
That's an interesting point, Ted. Would you class MeWe as social media? I think I kind of with John. It's more a closed forum that people can access and join and have fun in, but it's not social and doesn't really get pushed out to the wider world. Is that fair?
It is. It's locked down, and although other people out there would call it a social media, it's not. You're quite right. It's a closed forum, and that forum is probably the best word for it for us old farts.
Show notes for this very podcast at stevelitchfield.com. And you can catch see there for all my various socials, although many of them, as I say, are kind of legacy at this point. Also links there to buy us beers and coffees if you like this podcast, and the forums, and the videos, and the articles, and all the rest of it. So thank you in advance. A few miniature items of news and miscellany and things of interest, really. At 1 p.m. BST on Tuesday, if I've done the calculations and research right, this coming week, there is the Unihertz Titan 2 launches. Which sounds exciting, Ted. I'll put a photo in the show notes, except that it's not a product launch. It's a Kickstarter launch, which means we can still have to wait another blessed year or so, even after backing and paying, which is all a bit frustrating.
I can't believe that they're staging that as a launch. They're opening it up for people to pre-order and do an early bird kickstart thing.
Having said that, if it comes in at some crazy early bird price, I don't know, let's pick a number out of the air, Ted. 179 quid. Yeah, 150. Yeah. I would say, I was going to say $179. So it's about the same. At that level, you know, I can kind of afford to pay and wait. But if it's more than about 200, which I'm sure it will be, then, you know, I can't wait another year for them to go off and make the things.
No, we'll get Richard Yates to get one.
Any thoughts on the Titan 2, John?
At the moment, not really, no. It's like you do. It's a strange their funding model. So I think I'll wait and see, really, on that one.
Yeah, I still love the form factor anyway, and it still makes my heart flutter. Now, from Malcolm Bryant, our good friend, he's launched another new app for his wonderful sort of mini app store on Android. This is a FTP client. He says, I previously posted about the Wear FTP server app, which allows files to be moved between a Wear OS watch and a desktop computer using an FTP client such as FileZilla. That's fine, but what about an easy way to move files between a Wear OS watch and an Android phone? I looked around for a free FTP client app for Android, something I've done in the past, Malcolm, for various other reasons, FTP on Android. The ones he found looked, quote, pretty iffy and needed a subscription or with stuff with ads. So he wrote his own, as he usually does. And we'll link in the show notes to his, quote, customary video that shows how to install and use FTP client. And, yeah, everything's available also on freepok.org/downloads. But he's a good chap and yet another app to be aware of, Ted.
Yeah, well done. It's a long time since I had anything to do with FTP clients, and I probably won't remember what they're for or what they do.
But you at least do have a Wear OS watch, so in theory it's relevant to you. You could play with it. Yeah.
Sure.
Now, this was posted to MeWe by me midweek, but I have revised it kind of significantly since then. I've been doing some digging and making some educated guesses based on leaks on what the next new iPhones will be, specifically the iPhone 17 Pro series. So this is, most of it kind of seems locked in, Now we just need someone to leave a prototype in a bar and we'll find out for real. But here's my educated guess stroke research for the iPhone 17 Pro series launching in about 3 months' time. So I'll just run through the list and then, I don't know, maybe John, you can react as you have more experience with iPhones and tell me whether I'm on the ball or not. It's not going to be titanium this year. I reckon it's going to be just aluminium. It's going to have an anti-reflective coating copied from the Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra. It's going to have a facelifted back with a pixel-style ledge, kind of copying the pixel styling. Yeah, yeah. The show notes, Ted, I have put a little cropped screenshot of the 16 Pro Max versus the rumoured 17 Pro Max as seen in a casemaker's dummy device. And that kind of does look pixelish, doesn't it?
Certainly that island going right across the thing does. You're right, yeah. But it's retained the Apple look because of the way that the cameras are laid out, of course.
Yeah, it does look slightly odd, but as this is a casemaker's dummy, then it's, you know, that's a pretty reliable indication of how it's physically going to be formed. So we shall see. Triple 48 megapixel cameras, as in the telephoto was 12 megapixels. That's now also a quad bayer 48 megapixel, which does mean that this could offer 3.5 times optical zoom, but then you get double that, so 7 times lossless zoom by doing smart cropping into that high resolution sensor. So the previous few years have been 5 times optical. This can now offer, in theory, 7 times lossless while still having 3.5 times optical, which means that my complaint about, you know, the 5 times being way too long for portrait and general human use is not valid because it'll be 3.5 times, not far off my 14 Pro Max. And yet you can go much further in without loss if you really need to. So I think if this is true, this is going to be huge and it will certainly encourage me to be buying into the 17 Pro series. The front camera will be 24 megapixels for the first time. Usual chip upgrades, A19 series, etc. Plus vapor chamber cooling for the first time. Wired charging up from 25 watts to 35 watts will be due, but nice to have. And 12 gig of RAM rather than 8. So, John, any thoughts? Does all of that look realistic?
I think yes. They're still a bit way behind some of the Chinese brands, but yeah, I think I didn't see why not. I saw something about a 17 Air or something, so that looks quite interesting because I think the thin devices seem to be trendy at the moment.
Well, that's a very good point. They may be trendy, but don't appeal to me at all. And I know, Ted, you said you quite fancy the look of the Samsung thin phone. What say you to ultra-thin phones? Is it worth the compromise?
I was watching Martin last night on the Friday checkout, and he was demonstrating a phone that they'd made really, really thin. I think it might have been the Galaxy, actually. I can't remember what it was. But the point was that they kept the camera the same so that they didn't lose out. And so the camera was just sticking out ludicrously from this really thin body. And it just looked absurd. And he said so too. I don't know where they're going to go with this. They've tried all the mirrors and the folding optics and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, you know, it might be really, really thin and nice and light in that respect. But if you've got great big bits sticking out of it, it's going to look worse than a Microsoft Surface Duo 2.
Yeah, I mean, maybe time for a foldable, perhaps.
Well, we'll come on to that because we get to your device week in a few minutes' time. But this is one last thing. This is probably not new, but I did notice a new dialogue in Google Maps, at least I hadn't seen it before, that customizes your routes according to car engine type. So, again, I might be behind the times, but it says save fuel with routes based on your engine type. You can choose petrol, diesel, electric or hybrid. And because the different fuel types and engine types have different characteristics, and it can, in theory, can just finely tune your route so that you don't pollute the environment and you get best fuel economy. Is this new, Ted, or am I making this up?
I have to be honest with you, I'm not a car driver and I hardly ever use Google Maps, so I'm not the best person to ask. John?
I've used it before, but it can get quite interesting if you select certain routes, whereas you know, you end up going down sort of very narrow country roads, as I found out a couple of days ago. So I mean, I think it's great, but it's not always quite so practical.
Yeah, but you haven't, that dialogue doesn't ring a bell with you?
Not particularly. Well, no, not specifically, no, because before it just said environmentally, you know, more environmentally friendly route. It doesn't actually strictly say anything about your engine size or type of engine.
Well, there we are. Maybe I've discovered a new dialogue. So, yes, I took great delight in ticking hybrid and tapping on done and feeling all smug and green and good with myself. Right. On with folding phones and indeed in more of your device history, because you're a first timer on Phone Show Chat. So do you want to just tell people roughly what you do in terms for a living? What's your business?
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit niche, but I help people develop sort of medical devices and in vitro like diagnostic medical devices. So people come, they may, different phases really. Some might be just an idea and they want to take it from the lab to something they can actually physically make. Others might be a product they're bringing in from, I don't know, let's say the Far East or Australia, and they want to commercialize it for the EU. So I help them do that. So it ranges really, depending on what the product is and how complicated it is. In terms of devices, I started off with, I guess it would be the Motorola with Orange, you know, the one that had the flip, this massive brick and had the flip at the bottom.
Yeah.
Also Nokia's obviously, and Ericsson, which is still my favorite phone, which is like a small, tiny sort of half flip phone where it was silver and black. I can't remember the model of it.
Oh, this is before the Sony Ericsson tie-up, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it was, I've had a few Moto G's my time, which I really liked, but I just got a bit fed up with the cameras, I think early on. iPhones, obviously, Samsung Galaxies. For me, by far, they're the best, best of mechanics or my electronics or hardware in a phone. But I just can't get on with the OS, unfortunately. But a few Pixels then as well, Sony Xperias, great phones. But I just find the OS, I don't know, for me, I just can't get on with it. I just get bored of them very quickly. I know you guys love it. A Xiaomi 15 Ultra, which I've swapped for a Pixel 9 Pro Fold.
The Sony Xperia, let's take those UIs and skins, if we may. The Sony Xperia, Ted and I, we also find them boring, but that's also good in the Android world, we argue, because you can then add everything you want without the manufacturer's own skin getting in the way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you. I think for me, I tend to have quite short attention span, so I don't keep very long when I should. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous because they are very good friends.
Yeah, and going back to Samsung's One UI 7, etc., what do you find egregious about Samsung stuff?
Just too much going on. I just find that they are obviously stuff based on Android, but I find compared to the Pixels, which are quite simple, there's a lot going on, and I just didn't get my head around them really. I mean, because I had the hardware on them is fantastic, and you know, unparalleled with a lot of other devices, but it was just the OS that did my head in.
Was the Pixel 9 Pro Fold your first foldable? I'm expecting not, in which case, what were the previous devices?
Right. The other ones were flip phones, I guess, wouldn't it? The old ones were flip phones. But I actually have had a Samsung, one of the original flip ones. But again, the OS killed me off. But I had the Fold, the original Fold. I bought it secondhand, and it actually wasn't bad. I took it on holiday with me to Tunisia, and I was in the desert and everything with it, and it was fine. It was great. Again, I don't know why I changed it. I just did.
Do you mean the original Pixel Fold?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the chunky one that Ted's got. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's also, I think in some respects, the form factor is better than the new one because it seems slightly shorter but wider.
Yeah, yeah. And the new one, I mean, I keep thinking, shall I get one in for review? Shall I buy one in? But it just doesn't seem as exciting, as you say, and as interesting. It's not different enough from the competition. No. There are all of these folding device manufacturers, and there are about five or six of them now, including the Chinese. They're all converging on the exact same form factor, which makes it more boring.
Agreed. And I find, I mean, it's really good, don't get me wrong, but I don't really know much about the battery, how good the battery is, because I'm not away long enough, really, to do anything with it. But sorry about this. But basically, I have it on battery saver all the time. But what I find with it is I don't find the speakers are very powerful.
Okay, because the original one had pretty good speakers.
The
Pixel Fold, my one, the original, the speakers are staggeringly good, really, really good. So that's a shame. I didn't realise that.
It could be me, to be honest. So I'll probably need a hearing test.
I suspect it's also that as these devices get thinner, there literally isn't enough room for large speakers and large speaker cavities, so that you're bound to experience some degradation. The original Pixel Fold that Ted's got is chunky enough that there's plenty of room for the sound to reverberate, I reckon.
Yeah. But I still, do you find, Ted, that basically you just use one screen, you don't open it up?
I do, but I think that a huge number of people do that, and that's okay. I put my use down at 90% to 10%, and that's not uncommon with that particular device. My only problem with it really is that it's just big and bulky, and well, not big, but it's bulky and heavy, and it's a lump in your hand and a lump in your pocket, and holding it one handed is just heavy. But laying that aside, I really like the Fold.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a form, it's one of these things as well. I'm torn because I've got the tablet, but I don't really use it. And this kind of, I'm just trying to force myself to open up the phone to use the screen to say that I don't need to go to my tablet. So yeah, it's just for me, it's just getting a hand of it. But it's quite good for when I sort of, you know, say deep dive, when I start going, looking into cameras and stuff and all the other things. So when I go down rabbit holes, it's certainly very good. But it's also very good at distracting me. So yes.
How have you found the durability, having had both Pixel Fold devices? Have you had any problems at all in either?
No. What I have found, though, I'm on this beta program, and what I have found, I've had things freezing, which never froze before. And I don't know whether it's I've got it on battery saver, or whether it's this beta version of Android. I don't know which one it is at the moment.
Are you on the QPR?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the same problem. The Pixel 9, I've got the Pixel 9 here, and it's unusually for Google Pixel beta versions. It's really troublesome. It keeps freezing up. You're right. The fingerprint scanner doesn't work. The double tap to wake doesn't work. You've got to press the power button to get out of that. Once or twice I've had to just restart it, and then but everyone is saying that, and apparently Google are on a fix with it.
Okay, well that's good. I mean, I was a bit concerned that it was the phone, but I mean, yeah, I did that.
No.
I did buy like an old, probably third or fourth hand iPhone 13 mini, which I'm using to sort of carry about. But I don't know, it's one of these things. I'm reticent to move my SIM across too much. I know you guys are experts at it, but I don't know whether it's just going to break everything if I do it.
In my experience in the modern world, your contacts are all stored in your, in my case, my Google account. And I know I use an iPhone, but my contacts are still with Google because Google is common to every operating system, whether I'm on a laptop or a tablet or any kind of phone. I can always sign into my Google account and there are my contacts. So where your SIM is shouldn't affect your contacts one iota, as long as you make sure that on every phone you switch to, the default contact store is Google each time.
Okay, fair enough. I need to work on that.
Yeah. So in terms of your sort of general computing, you've got, I think it's Windows for your desktop and iOS for that 13 mini and iPads?
It used to be Windows. I have got a Windows laptop because I took my business. I had someone worked for me before. But basically, I've got their old laptop. But in reality, most of my work is from my office now. So I've got an Apple Studio. I've also got an iPad as well. Not iPad. What's the laptop? MacBook.
Yeah. Okay. Air. Yeah. But it's interesting you say you hardly ever use a tablet. I think I commented a couple of weeks ago that with the larger phones, whether it's Android or in this case the iPhone Pro Max series, it's large enough that I find I'm very happy watching media on it and doing most things. It's so rare that gap between the laptop and the phone is so small. I very sometimes only get the tablet out once a week. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, I mean, if that, I mean, you know, it could be months. I watch YouTube on my phone. I won't watch anything more than that. So like, you know, videos or streaming, yeah. I won't do that. So I guess I tend to listen to podcasts and audiobooks anyway. But, it's taken longer for the conversions between the phone and the computer. So I'm just waiting for us to have one device that does it all, and surely processors are getting to that stage now.
Well, that Pixel 9 Pro Fold with a few software updates, that's going to be jolly close until if Google's desktop plans come to fruition, where you can plug that into a monitor and do a sort of Samsung Dex-like worktop. I think that will do an awful lot of what you want.
Yes, hope so. I mean, you guys just need to stop me from walking, jumping over the ledge, whatever it is, and selling it.
it's a bit of an illness around our parts.
Yes.
You're also afflicted, are you? It's a bit like COVID, but not quite so lethal.
Definitely. Definitely.
Any particular apps you want to shout out and give links to?
Yeah, the usual things. I mean, blame it on my brother and stuff, because I used to listen to Radio 4 all the time. And I was brought up in Nigeria, and so over there we had the World Service. So it was mostly sort of, you know, talk radio more than anything. So Audible's, BBC Sounds, Spotify, that sort of thing. I had a brief dalliance with Tidal that I understood about hi-res and how it doesn't really make much difference. But the, I suppose the only different one is a thing called Bray FM, which basically is different. Apparently they've had psychologists on the case, and they have different music. And the idea is, depending on whether you want to focus, relax, you know, read or you know, I don't know, decompress, there's different channels or different playlists you can click on. And then basically it divides it between, like, you know, intense, medium, or, you know, or very light touch. And it does kind of work. But whether it's me doing a placebo or whether it actually physically does something, I'm not too sure.
So it's a bit like I think about 3 or 4 PSCs ago, I reported that in iOS 18, Apple added these built-in productivity and going to sleep and relaxing, yeah, all the different, literally Apple music playlists that were free to all and just kind of baked into the phone. This is kind of the same idea, but in app form.
Yes, I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, I think they use a bit more marketing speak in terms of saying how, you know, something can be proven, but whether it is, I really don't know. But it does the job. It's weird because the sounds are, you know, it's not music as we know it, so to speak. It's literally just different sounds in the background. But it's worth a dabble, and I think you get a free trial or something, and it works. You know, it'll work for some, not for others. I mean, for me, I tend to listen to a podcast or a book when I go to sleep, and so I've got a whole library of stuff where I only know half the story, basically.
Yeah, so that's brain.fm. What's this Tortoise app?
Oh, it's Tortoise as well, sorry. Tortoise is basically, it's a news thing. So I think they've actually bought The Guardian now. But it was basically an online news thing, app, and it allowed you access to, you know, interviews. Also, they'd have live debates and that sort of thing. And then also they'd have reviews of books. And also people would say that, you know, their favourite podcast playlists and all that. So it was pretty handy, actually. But they've merged with everything now, and it was quite original when it came out, but now there's a lot competing with it, so I just don't have the time, I don't think, really.
Okay, we now need an Aidan Bell type jingle, a Room 101. You've got a few rants you wanted to run past our listeners, so first one on battery life.
Yeah, I got a real thing about it. I know the Sonys are excluded from this, but I mean, you know, most phones that I have, is the battery life is just awful. I think maybe I'm not okay enough with basically turning things off and reducing the drain, but I just think the battery life on a lot of phones are just, you know, the batteries don't last long enough. I think the new technology in batteries is going to help, but, you know, not many, apart from the Chinese, are adopting that at the moment.
Yeah, they are putting in higher capacity, which always helps, and the silicon carbon anodes, if I've got the name right, that does give, yes, you an extra 20% capacity with a few caveats, but 20% extra plus a larger capacity to start with, that should make a difference, I think.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I mean, I think I just had the wrong phones. And then the other one as well is the updates. I think it's the idea of a lot of things are, you know, incremental at best. If that's the right term. I mean, I remember Apple when they launched the Apple Pencil, and they had this big fanfare, and, you know, this is a great thing to slice bread, and we have named it the Pencil. And he's, and so you just kind of think that a lot of the updates are like that, and you think, well, what difference is this really going to make to anyone? None, not really. Yes.
One of my regular listeners, I won't name him, but he's a nice chap, but I inquired whether he wanted to carry on donating to me for Phone Show Chat, etc. He said, no, not this year, Steve. I think the phones have become so commoditized that I've actually stopped listening to PSC every week because there's just nothing new that interests me. And I think that's a valid viewpoint. The people who are still listening to PSCs are the diehard SIM swappers, device swappers and geeks. And that's, and you're very much in that camp, John. But I can absolutely take his point about things becoming commoditized.
Yeah, and I think, yeah. And then going on to rant as well as AI. I know Ted has a thing about AI, so I thought I'd raise it. But I just think it's the issue that I think people have to embrace it, not avoid it. It's here to stay, basically. And I think it's people need to think of it as a tool to help rather than replace. And I think there's a lot of people who are in non-manual jobs that need to start thinking about how to use it to help their jobs or help them, or at least understand how it works, because it's a train coming down the track, and we're not going to avoid it.
How's that impacting your particular business, John?
It's been really, really helpful. I mean, I suppose the one thing I would say about AI and my experience with it is you kind of have to know roughly what the answer is for it to be good, because otherwise it can hallucinate. But I think you also look at things into perspective, because, for example, if a human being gets things right 85% of the time, you think, well, that's pretty good. But if an AI gets things wrong 1% of the time, it's like, oh, it's unacceptable. And so in reality, I think things are out of perspective and is getting better. But for me, it's a really, really good source of reference. I can use it to check what I've written. I can also use two AIs to check against each other. And so it's been a revelation for me, to be honest.
What about in your actual day-to-day running of the business, though? Are your employees at risk, the ones that sit behind computers most of their time?
No, because if they've got any sense, they'll use it. And then basically means they can always be more productive. You've got to be careful, though, because if you just present, it's pretty obvious now when someone's written something by AI because it's too good, basically, and it doesn't have... It doesn't have their little signature on it. But I just don't think, it's certainly in my industry, there's so many different regulations and different things you have to pull in from, it's not being a lawyer. But if you imagine there's lots of different regulations and guidelines you have to use and you have to bring them all together, it's a wonderful tool for that. Because otherwise, I've got basically bookcases full of regulations and stuff that now I can just basically throw away, unless someone sends a massive EMP signal here, then I'm stuffed.
Yeah, I think in an office environment, in my experience, what I could see coming was things like payroll and personnel stuff. When I was working, I was responsible for the payroll, and every month I did the payroll from start to finish by hand, and with my computer, obviously, and using software on the computer. But basically, it was human driven. But now I understand that it's completely done by robots, because it's a job that robots can just do, and they know how to process the data, and it doesn't need a human. So I think in an office environment, possibly like yours, I don't know, but those kinds of jobs, like the payroll or like writing policies and health and safety stuff, and that sort of thing.
That's certainly I certainly agree with you there. I think it depends which one you use, because the two I tend to use, one is Claude, which they go through different updates. So basically, it's almost like a race to the finish, and the race is never quite complete. So, it's basically 5 yards to the line, and someone got to go well down 5 yards, 5 meters to the line. And another one will release an updated version, which is better than the previous one. So it's still, and they're at a phase now where, unlike we said, talked about mobile phones earlier, there are genuine, you can notice genuine upgrades, and they do make a difference. I just think that people need, it's what you're saying, Ted, is correct, but there's a far more applications to it than that. I mean, there's the next thing will be, which is what ChatGPT, I think, claiming now, is that that it will now start being to do things for you when you speak to it. So you won't, you just speak to it and it'll do stuff on your screen. It'll do searches for you, get it to do things. I don't think I'll let it loose on my credit card yet, but it's supposed to be pretty good. But it's also as well, it's quite, I do searches like, you know quite well that I'm looking for a camera at the moment, and just literally it will tell me, don't buy this camera because it's too expensive for what you want. Yeah. I wouldn't have put a price limit in it. And then, it's almost, although it doesn't, it almost feels like it's reasoning and coming back and saying, no, the practical solution is this. This is what you should stick with. And so it is moving on, and it's noticeably better. So when I said, I said before, there was two. One was Claude and the other one was Gemini, basically. So I think I pay for a Google account for my business. So I use that, and it's sort of included in that. And so I play them off against each other.
So would you have a robot in your fridge that did your shopping for you and trust it to buy what you need?
Well, I'd trust a robot better than me because at the moment, let's say, for example, Amazon, I suppose other supermarkets or other companies are available too. But I subscribe for dog food, and this week I had three deliveries of something I should order once a month, and two deliveries of something else I order once, once every 2 weeks. So I trust a robot better than me, I think. Yes.
Yeah, I know you're a fan of Gemini as well, Ted. And I've been kind of poo-pooing AI, but just using it on the periphery. But I've been finding I've been using the things like ChatGPT and Gemini more and more over the last week. Every time I've had a question that I wanted answered, and normally that would require me Googling it and then looking through about half a dozen answers, and gradually starting to trust the Google Search Gemini sort of overview, AI overview, which is becoming better and better. Also on the latest iPhones, the Siri actually defaults to ChatGPT with a button. So you ask it a question and it says, well, do you want me to search the web or click this button or say use ChatGPT? And if you say that, yes, it takes 3 or 4 seconds to go off, ask ChatGPT anonymously and come back with the answer. But the answer is always so superior to what Siri would do on its own that I've been quite impressed. And so I'm using ChatGPT and Gemini more and more each week. And maybe it is the future. It's certainly not the be all and end all. I certainly won't pay for it, but I am using it more, Teb, which is a step in the right direction.
If
Yeah, me too.
if you look at, let's say, for example, sorry to spend so much time doing it, but if you look at, like, on Claude, you have projects, and Gemini, you have gems. And what you do is you can brief the AI of what it is. You can say it's an expert in this, and basically you can use one AI to say, right, define this gem for me. So, and then you cut and paste that into Gemini, and then you start putting searching or using it for work. And the response it comes back with is just phenomenal. And, it quite quickly, it surpasses what I could do. So it's like, this thing, I think on my days are numbered. I'm glad I'm 56 next month.
And when you start playing with Notebook LM as well, it just blows you away because if you're into research and trying to, I mean, finding a camera, for example, you could just throw what you want at it, and it was Notebook LM is another thing. Steve, you should have a go with that as well because it's a clever tool.
It even talks, it creates its own podcast.
Yes, that's right. It was Kev Wright was playing with that last week.
The voices are really annoying now.
Oh yeah.
Unlike our voices, which are
No,
thoroughly
I know.
relaxing and trustworthy and so forth. You had some stuff about audio that just to give your voice a break, I'm going to do some of Ted's stuff and then we'll kind of come back to that later if that's okay.
That's fine. Sorry, that's a signal I've been talking too much. Sorry.
Ted, what do you want to highlight this week from your device playings?
I want to focus this week with my series of Edge 60 tweaks. Last week I talked about the quad curve of the screen. This week I'm going to talk about the POLED screen itself. And as we know, the Motorola screens, POLED screens are fabulous, and this is no exception. It's gorgeously bright, colourful, and vibrant. It's reaching 4,500 nits in auto mode. It's got a refresh rate of 120 hertz, if for those that can tell the difference, 20 to 9 ratio, and it's the pixel count makes it is it 1.5K or something? I think it's 1.5K because it's not 1080p and it's not 1440. It's somewhere in the middle, but the pixel, the PPI is 446. It is another one of these 6.67 inch panels, like I said, with the quad curving, which is really nice. Interestingly, after I spoke about the quad curving last week, I did send off and got myself a cheap, clear TPU, and it absolutely ruined it. All those things I was talking about, they haven't made it very well, and you lose the whole bottom end of that. So I've taken it off again. Gorilla Glass 7i, which I haven't had time to test that, but it apparently is better than Gorilla Glass 3 and 5. And it's got all that lovely IP rating and military standard stuff as well. So, yeah, that's my this week shout out for the Edge 60. I'm still enjoying that. I'm still waiting for my Yola C2 phone to arrive. It was
What?
stuck at hell. It was stuck at Helsinki Airport. Then it was stuck at Deeside, waiting for someone to pay the VAT, the duty on it. And no one told me. No, Yola didn't tell me. Deeside didn't tell me. Parcel Force didn't tell me. And eventually, 7 days later, they sent a letter out in the mail. And telling me what to do to pay the duty, and I've now done that. But it's coming on Tuesday, so I'll come back to that one. But the main thing I've been doing this week is playing with Ubuntu Touch on the Fairphone 3 Plus. Now there's a lot of stuff in here, and I don't want to take up the whole show with it. But maybe you and John can kind of skip through there and see anything that catches your eye, and I can talk about aspects of it. It was Mike Warner, as usual, rescued us by putting it on there, because I tried myself and I just couldn't do it. The problem was that the Fairphone 3 Plus was on Android 13 and I couldn't get it back to Android 12. The Ubuntu Touch would not install on Android 13. You've got to get it back to Android 10. And Mike knew how to do that, of course, and I didn't. I really tried hard to do it, but it's a really interesting UI though. It's different, and that's the main thing about it. There's lots of differences. It's very swipey. A lot of it makes me feel like I'm playing with Symbian, with the open, what's it called, the open store, and that feels very Symbian, very Nokia, very back in the day. And there's all sorts of apps that are thrown in. As I say, if you want to pick any of those out, I can do so. I did do a post of this in the MeWe group, and I will be putting it on my blog as well. So, loads of stuff to unpack. Interesting, swipey. And the UI is totally different from anything you've got. It's not Android, and I'm sure there are ways of getting Android apps on it, but it's very, very difficult for me at first look. And I think that most people would probably give up with that. There's not even an email client on it. They push you towards this app called Deco, and if you start to use that to try and log in a Gmail account, for example, you get kind of ensnared in this IMAP SMTP stuff, and you've got to know the codes, which are find outable. That's no problem. But at that point, I think most people, unless they're really, really privacy centric, are going to kind of give up and say, "I'll just go and use an Android phone, thank you." John and yourself, perhaps you can have a look through that and see if there's anything that catches your eye.
So what about music apps and that sort of thing? Is there anything that allows streaming?
Anything that you want to do that you think that should be running ordinarily, you tend to be doing via a web wrapper. Yeah. So it's got this browser built in called the Morph browser, and sure enough, you can log into what you like in there. They do supply also a music app. And the music app is this particular phone has got an micro SD card slot, so I was able to stuff loads of music on that and put it in there. And the music app is good; it's fine. It does album art and scrub lines and playlists, and I mean, it doesn't appear to be going off to grab album art that it doesn't know about, for example. So no, it's not going online to do that. And so it's very much like using an MP3 player in that respect. It stays offline and it plays what you've got on the device. And the same is true of the media player app as well, which, you know, plays a video, which it does absolutely fine, but maybe not online. If you want to stream stuff, I mean, you can go and into the Morph browser and sign into your Google YouTube Music account, and it will do that, no problem. But that's why I'm saying, really, it goes back some years to our previous experience where apps were not around.
So would you say it's more a hobby phone still at the moment?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I can't imagine anyone, unless you are really, really driven, as I say, for security and privacy and keeping off the web and having a phone that is just hell for you, and perhaps your server at your house, for example, which is something that Gareth Miles from Tech Addicts does, I know, and other people as well. If you wanted to lock it all down and only use your phone in that respect, type and only use the browser to be online with anything, then that can work. I mean, phone calls and SMS and all of that, that's all there. They've got clients that work all that stuff out. PIM data is the same as the email, really. You've got it has got a calendar app and it's got a contacts app. But you've got to get the data into it, and you either just start again or import the data by going and grabbing files from exports from existing tools. But then it's not going to write back to it. I think most people will probably end up just using the browser, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it does sounds potential. But the Fairphones, I've always been really tempted, but yeah, I've never pressed the buy button again. But I like the principle. But I don't know. As you say, I spend enough money on phones that it is.
It's just interesting to see something different, though, John. That's the thing. Mm.
Yes. And
it's okay. It works. It's just the connectivity. Somebody that's coming from a Google world where everything is backed up, and you know, sometimes as soon as you've done it, entering any data on the fly, it's backed up, and you look at your computer screen, and there it is. It's done. If you want to not live in that modern world, you can absolutely use this phone, no question at all. It will be interesting to see what happens with the Sailfish when it arrives, and whether the Sailfish, I think, is on the Yolla phone, is a bit more open to people using Android apps on it. So we'll see how that all works out. Ubuntu Touch is very, very locked down by design, and it's great. And I'm really grateful for Mike for doing it. Any thoughts, Steve?
Can you sideload Android APKs and run them that way, or do you need to go through some Ubuntu Touch middleware to sort of run them in a wrapper of some kind?
I don't know. I haven't done that yet. So there's a lot of stuff I haven't done yet because okay. I've only just kind of started playing with it. But if you've got an Android APK app and you want to install it on the system, then my first thought is no, it won't run because it's not Android. You'd need to get a app that is running on the system. And if you go to the open store, there are apps that people have written for it, and they do work. I mean, I installed the Mastodon app, for example, and I successfully signed in, and it's all working really nice, and it looks great. So if you're prepared to go to the open store and see what they've got, but there's not a lot in there. I mean, I went to try and find an alternative to the email client, this Deco thing, and I didn't recognize any of the other apps that were available to do that. And at that point, while I was in the open store, it felt just like a Nokia and a Symbian with what was the store called?
The Ovi store,
yeah. And it felt like I was in there, and step back in time.
Yeah, yes. So I was just thinking, BlackBerry OS 10 days. We used to love that about 6-7 years ago. There was a way to get Android apps and even the Play Store, I think, working. Even though not every app worked, it required a few workarounds and a few kludges. But there was a way of doing it, following a simple guide. You'd have thought by now there would be some kind of Ubuntu Touch. These are the 5 steps you have to take and things you have to install in order to be able to run Android apps. It should be possible.
Yeah, I think it is, and I haven't gone deeply into it enough to find those things out. But yeah, certainly on BlackBerry, you could install the Amazon App Store, couldn't you? So in the same way, anything you could get from the Amazon App Store, you could then install on BlackBerry and other kind of more secure systems. So. Yeah, watch this space. When the Yolla is here, it'll be interesting to compare, and I'll come back to it at some point down the line.
Yeah, well remembered. It was the Amazon App Store on the BlackBerry, not the Google Play Store, and that was quite a crucial difference, I seem to remember.
So was the Passport, was that before that or after that?
Yeah, the Passport was OS 10, wasn't it, Ted?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was only the ones after the Passport that started having Android on board, and there was only about 2 or 3 of those, and then they gave up.
There was the Q10, which I had, and there was another one, and then the Passport. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Happy days. Before you leap back in, and we cover the high-resolution audio, which I'm dying to talk about, but John's an expert. A couple of things I refresh my memory on about the iPhone 16's camera system, things it had been doing for the last umpteen months, and I just didn't realise just how they worked. Specifically, using the camera control, the much-reviled iPhone 16 camera control, to lock focus and exposure and then reframe the shot. Plus, the way the iPhone 16 auto-saves depth information if it spots a subject. So if I'm waving the iPhone 16 series at you, Ted, for example, just taking a normal photograph, you think, well, that's a normal photo. But it detects that it's got a human being in the subject, or a pet or something that people would normally take a portrait of, and it auto leaps in, saves all the depth information. So after the fact, you say, I wish I'd taken that photo of Ted as a portrait. You tap the edit, and there is the variable aperture, or the effect, depth of field effect, and you can make it into a portrait after the fact, even though you didn't select portrait mode at the time. And I haven't really played with this until this video. So in the show notes, I've put my video which demonstrates all this. And 1 week on, still in T-shirt, shorts and sandals in this crazy and unusual UK heat. It was 31 degrees yesterday here in Berkshire. I'm still on the smaller device because it just goes better with the minimal clothing. And I've got a few musings on small versus large and non-pro versus pro. But I suspect we're going to run out of time for this show, so we'll save that for next week. App notifications. I wrote an article, Ted. You like articles rather than shorts. App notifications, whack-a-mole. It's a game that has to be played for a quiet life. And we were chatting about this before the show and how I have app notifications turned off on almost everything. All I want on my phone is things like text and WhatsApp messages and emails to come in. I do not want notifications from every single one of the 100 apps I've got. They all try and push stuff at me and say, can we do it? And I almost always say no. So I call it app notifications whack-a-mole. Did you get a chance to read this?
I haven't, no, but it's interesting that the later versions of Android now force developers to make sure they ask that question, and there's a button on every one that comes through to give you the option to go to the settings and opt out of all those notifications. And I regularly do that. I don't do it for MeWe, but I do it for everything else.
Anyway, so I've been busy doing a few videos and articles. This is a kind of a bizarre thing. I'll mention it briefly because you did mention it, I think, on Tech Addicts as well last week. I've got your old Creative Pebble Pro 2 Bluetooth speakers on my desk. It's not mobile specific, but it is Bluetooth specific. And they just sit on my desk. And when my laptop's turned off, you know, there's no sound playing or so forth, but they're still powered on. They're plugged into the mains because you get better audio. But at 5 a.m., they spark into life and play a few seconds of a random media stream, you know, an Open University program or something. Like, what? This is, they're spooked. The ghost in the machine. It's nothing to do with anything I've been playing on any of my devices. It's totally random. So I go round all the phones at 5 a.m. in the dark, eyes bleary, checking all my tablets and laptops and phones until I just start turning them all off and turning Bluetooth off, and still the random audio comes through. Is there a ghost in the machine? Is there anything that can be done? And I know you've been typing this into Gemini, so is there an answer?
Yeah, I asked Gemini if there was an answer, and she said, some Bluetooth speakers, if they lose connection to their last paired device, or if they're powered on without a previously connected device in range, will automatically enter pairing mode to become discoverable. If your neighbour happens to be scanning for a Bluetooth device at that exact moment, and your Pebble 2 Pro 2 is showing up, they could accidentally pair with it. This is more likely if they have a device that automatically tries to connect to any available Bluetooth speaker. While highly unlikely for random media to play unless they were actively trying to play something, it is a possibility for an unintended connection. The same time every night, though, you'd think, but that probably isn't the case.
It's bizarre, isn't it? I do have a neighbour whose an adult son wakes up and goes off for a run or work at about 5 a.m. It's got to be something to do with his equipment that's being tagged, latched onto by my speakers, which are just frantically looking for something to pair with. And he probably gets as frustrated as I do on his equipment and saying, you're now connected to Pebble Pro. And he's saying, I haven't got a Pebble Pro. So he's probably just as frustrated. So to keep the peace, I've just unplugged them and they're now in a drawer. If you'd like your Pebble Pro speakers back, Ted, you're very welcome. The moment then.
No, I don't. You can sell them and we'll share the money. is there no reset hole on them? Have you tried that?
No, there's no way of well, you can do a factory reset, but I don't believe that's the problem. The problem is that they are. I leave them powered on at night, and I'm blowed if I'm going to keep unplugging them each night.
It's worth a try. Do a factory reset.
All right, okay. In the interest of experimentation, I shall play. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting, and Bluetooth issues are always something we come back to on PSE, and people may have their own experiences to share. Now, you mentioned, John, that you were in your mid-50s. How is your hearing? Because we had a bit of an audio debate on me when you leapt in as, if I may say so, something of an expert here, and rightly so. So how is your hearing, and do you want to lead into this particular issue?
Yes, well, it depends. My hearing is probably nothing above 14 kilohertz. It's not very good, so I'm not exactly the best example. But I've been down this audiophile rabbit hole for long enough now, and changing earbuds and headphones and stuff. And so I eventually decided to use AI to help me research if I was actually just wasting my money. And it came back and said more or less that I am. Yeah, with regards, we talked about, didn't we? I think it was a Samsung S24 and an iPhone 16.
Yes, specifically with wired output. In other words, if you're plugging in the same DAC to both devices over USB Type-C, I would have guessed that the audio you get out would be identical, but there's clearly a lot more to it than that, and you've uncovered the details.
Yeah, so basically Apple basically down samples everything to 48 kilohertz. Whereas Samsung allows kind of the native output to come through. So that's 32-bit, 384 kilohertz. So, yeah, so the Samsung is certainly a lot better. You can do it, you can fiddle about with iPhones, but you need external apps and to know a bit more about what you're doing and get and improve the output. But in reality, I don't think you could hear the difference anyway. So, yeah, so it's just not worth it. And if you're using Bluetooth, just get a decent set of Bluetooth earbuds or buds that you like, rather than go for one that's high res. I think the 15 Ultra, the Xiaomi 15 Ultra, that has hi-fi audio instead of Bluetooth, and that's four meg or something. So then that's serious. But then I tried that, but as I say, I couldn't hear the difference because it's a bit like, you know, you need to be a dolphin to hear that. So. So I think you just stick with it. So I think, you know, if for wired one, certainly if you're for most headphones, I would say it's probably not, you wouldn't hear the difference. But if you're going down the audiophile route, so you're spending a lot of money on a decent set of headphones, I think they're saying £300 plus and a DAC, then yes, you'd hear the slight difference. But it's not necessarily like light and day. The biggest difference actually is the headphones that you have or earbuds that you have. They're the ones that will make the biggest difference out of anything. The DAC and the sort of, is only something like 10%, and they reckon the headphones are about 70% basically of what you actually hear and the quality of what you hear.
Yeah, do you remember the back in the day? This is going back about 5 or 6 years now. There was a Type C DAC made by Hi-Diz, HI-DIZS, I believe. I've still got one here, and the audio from that was just so much louder and more vibrant than on any of the other DACs I've tested. So that. There is clearly some difference in terms of the amplifier used in these little bits of accessories. It was an expensive DAC. I think it was about £30 or £40. So yeah. I get you kind of get what you pay for. But and it also drive higher impedance headphones, if I've got that the right way around. Yeah. So although in terms of quality and the things you've mentioned are relevant, there's also the fact that it depends what sort of headphones your DAC and cable are driving, I think.
It does. I mean, also as well, I don't go down the sort of audiophile terminology, but they start going on about you know, whether it's a warm sound or bright sound and that sort of thing. So that a lot of that is dependent upon what headphones you get. Like I prefer a warmer sound, so more bass than treble. But, you know, if you can get a DAC that basically emphasizes that, or you can get headphones that emphasize it. I tend to try not to change the sound settings within the computer. I tend to like just try and live and have it native because, like I said, well, I'm just too lazy. but yeah, so it does depend. And I would say that, you know, the first thing you want to do is not worry about the phone so much, is spend the money on a set of headphones. In reality, if you're going to get down the phone route, the experience are best because they've got the best built-in DACs and the best headphone sockets. You got the 24 Ultra, which is not so good for Bluetooth because basically it doesn't have the high-res codecs, not that they make much difference. LG60 for the antique ones, and that's got a very good DAC in it, if you can still get it. But I think it's way out of some things. Asus ROG phones, if you don't mind gaming phones, they're really good. They've got very good DACs in them. And then if you want something, that's basically simple, just stick with your iPhone 16 Pro. You're not really going to hear much difference between the previous one either. I think a lot of it is going to depend more on the OS and the phone itself. And, I put aside, sound quality hierarchy, 70% headphones, 15% phone, 10% source quality, so Spotify or Tidal, and then 5% your ear stroke environment, whereas in my case, it might be more 30%.
It's all a bit lost on me, really. It's all kind of physics stuff, which, I mean, as you know, whenever I review a phone, I listen to it with Sony's, with the headphones, with the 3.5mm, and with everything else, Bluetooth, and I'm just blown away. I've tried to listen to some high res audio with like Tidal and stuff on the Sony, and I can't tell the difference. I think you're right, John. I really can't. Now, I've got 62 year old ears, which is one thing, but I think that Bluetooth is so incredibly advanced these days that for almost like 99.5% of users, they're just going to be blown away with what comes with the phone anyway.
I think so. I think the again, it depends. I think you should be chasing enjoyment, not numbers, and that's basically the way you look at it.
So,
that applies to everything, really.
Yeah. In the show notes, you've quoted quite rightly that the iPhone resamples its output to 48 kilohertz, which technically is a limitation if you've got source material that's higher frequency, but as you note, with 48 kilohertz, you can still reproduce sounds up to 24 kilohertz, which is still 14 kilohertz than I can hear in my 60s, and probably higher than most human beings on the planet can actually hear.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the analogy there is basically like building a doghouse with a door that accommodates a giraffe. Impressive, necessary, yes.
Yeah, and you've got a quick test for listeners in the show notes. Do you want to just introduce that?
Yeah, sure. So, basically it's saying, okay, you've got to be able to hear, if you can't hear a 15 kilohertz tone, then the sample rate of 96 kilohertz will offer exactly no benefit whatsoever. Get yourself a set of better headphones, really.
How can people test that? What can they do?
You can do tests. So if you go on Apple Music or Spotify, they will literally have hearing tests playlist on it. And then it will tell you basically, what you can hear up to. Also, with certain earbuds and stuff, I know it's a bit late by then because you've already bought them, but they can test it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I went to a gig last year, Ted, and I basically destroyed the hearing in one of my ears, I reckon I lost 10% of my hearing in one night alone through being too close to the front with some incredibly loud guitar amps. But I knew that because after the ringing had kind of mainly died down a week later, there are various hearing apps on the various Play Store and Apple App Store, hearing testing applications. And if you plug in high quality headphones, they will reproduce the test sounds and it can map your hearing at all of these different frequencies in each of your ears. So you can get a pretty good baseline of what you can hear and what you can't. And yes, if part of that range is at 15 kilohertz and you're showing 0% appreciation, then most of the chasing the quality, chasing the numbers is kind of irrelevant.
That's right. I mean, it's all there. A lot of it is just marketing speak, and I think a lot of audiophiles are chasing equipment as opposed to sound.
Let's move on with our photo of the month for May 2025 winner. Ted.
Yeah, the winner for May was Chris Clayton with his amazing shot escalators, which he took with an iPhone 14 Pro Max. And everyone voted in our poll, so thank you all for doing that. And this one will go forward to the photo of the year, of course, but it's just a stunning picture. I love the way in which him, people that shoot architecture and lines and symmetry, and it must be the technical drawing fan in me, I think. It just looks lovely. And the way in which he's played with the colours to make it all a really kind of vibrant, bluey colour. Really, really good shot and a well worthy winner. And just interesting, with some human interest in it as well. In some sort of shopping centre or something. Any thoughts, John?
No, I think it's beautiful. Beautiful. It's a very, what did I say, industrial design or something. So it's probably not actually. But yeah, it's beautiful. I like the symmetry. There's not too many people in it, but it frames it and gives it a context, basically, of how large it is. The colour is fantastic. It's not quite, it's not, as you say, it's a bluey sheen. It's not just straight black and white. So yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, I think all the five options, they were all super this month. Yet another cracking month in the PSC Photos group. I loved the eyeball one best, looking at the close-up of the eye. But this Chris's monochrome escalators are also top-notch. I described it in the notes as a masterpiece of mood and framing and of light and dark. I love the textures and the lines and the symmetry, so no complaints from me.
Well put.
Yeah. Very nice indeed. When I first saw it, I thought the screen at the bottom of the frame was distracting. But actually, I think on reflection, when you look at the roof at the top, it kind of plays up against that as well. So I think it worked really well. Composition is an interesting thing to, you know, it's very subjective and people will have different views. But yeah, well done, Chris.
On reflection, I see what you did there, Ted. Very good. Also on me, we are PSC Classifieds Group. What's there this week?
Oh, dear. It's a bit... there's not much in it at all, I'm afraid. The everything's sold, and there's only a couple of things left. There's a Samsung Galaxy S24 FE, 128 gig, £400. It looks like it's black or grey, and I can't remember what the names of the colours are now. But a reminder to all, please, even though you've taken a photograph of it, it's not always clear what colour it is. Please write what colour it is in the blurb, thank you. And then there's a Pixel 9a, 128 gigabytes. Actually, I think they all are, aren't they? That's in black, £310. And I got one in the bargain basement, which is Mike Warner's Redmi Note 12, which is a 4G phone, but for only £65, 128 gigabytes, four gigs of RAM. I think that anyone wanting to have a play with Hyper OS 2, that's a good opportunity for £65 to see what Xiaomi are doing with their Hyper overlay. So that's cool stuff. And Steve, you've got one?
Well, just having done all this exciting research on what's going to be in the iPhone 17 Pro series, I thought, you know, I can see myself actually liking some of this and forking out. So in terms of raising money, I'm selling my iPhone 14 Pro Max 1 terabyte in mint condition with its box, et cetera, for £650, including special delivery in the UK. Any takers, then the funds will go towards my presumably 17 Pro Max in a few months' time. There we are.
Very cool. Any thoughts, John?
No, in general, I mean, I've sold quite a lot of stuff on there. And I was going to say, it's an amazing forum because people pay you before you've shipped anything to them. And it's everyone's very trusting. And it's all done by reference and people vouching for people. So it's quite amazing. And it's quite so different to eBay or anything like that. It's very refreshing. So, yes, please, everyone, tell your stuff.
Give that man a medal for saying that.
not money, but a medal.
We do try to keep a closed group, as Steve said at the top of the show, really, and particularly that group where people are kind of more trusting than anywhere else on the planet, it would seem. And we do have that backup group as well, which is about introducing people to other people and vouching for people in the background. So we do have a system in place, and the membership of that group is strictly controlled. So if anyone listening to this wants to join our classifieds group, you'll need to email me and we can talk about that and get to know each other a bit. So PSC classifieds.
What year did we move over to the MeWe groups, Ted? Can you remember?
2018.
Is it that? Wow. That most recent? I thought it was further back than that. God, I guess that's still 7 years, isn't it? So Google Plus ended in 2018.
Well, it was actually the beginning of 2019, but we started the groups at the tail end of 18, and then we formally switched it over and closed the Google Plus accounts in leading up to April 19, when they were going to shut it down.
Yeah, I can honestly say that every secondhand device I have bought in the last 7 years then has been from PSC classifieds and not from other sources. So yeah, another wholehearted recommendation here. And I was sort of Google Plus because I was having a trawl through some of the defunct pages within my own website. And I kept coming across HTML comments. Insert Google Plus tag here if you want it to work and so forth. So I had to take out all this JavaScript that I no longer needed.
I have that in all of our whatever works notes from back in the day. I go and try to put the links in, and they're all dead Google Plus links. It's very annoying.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, John. You've been great.
Pleasure. Well, thank you. Sorry if I've been talking a bit too much, but I've enjoyed it. It's been. I was wondering, like, I'd be overwhelmed with techie talk, but it's been very nice. Very kind to me.
And just one quick question to you: given that it's now June and what's coming up for you in terms of a device you're going to be lusting after before Christmas, shall we say?
I think this one I'm going to try and keep this Pixel profiled, to Pixel 9 profiled as long as I can. But I think I'm going to change my iPhone 13 mini because I'm just not getting on with the iOS this time. So I think I got a feeling I'm just going to go for another Pixel or try and find something exotic to use as my second phone.
Pixel 10, of course. Yeah. The Pixel 10 standard. Yeah.
Okay, good point. Yeah. So I may be getting rid of both. Yeah, you never know.
Any last words from you, Ted?
PodHub UK is where you'll find links to all the audio podcasts that we do. And you'll also find that at tedsalmon.com, where you'll also get links to all the MeWe groups. And if you want to buy us coffees and beers, that would be very welcome. And it's most encouraging too. Even a couple of quid or whatever, it all helps. And it can be the price of a coffee. And that really is encouraging. PayPal.me/TedSalmon, PayPal.me/Steve Litchfield. And we'll be very grateful.
Indeed. The show notes at stevelitchfield.com. Don't forget the T in Litchfield, as if you're likely to forget after 17 years of PSC being on the air. Hopefully the spelling has worked its magic by now. Cheery goodbye from my two co-hosts.
Goodbye.
We'll be back next week on the Show Chat.